Looking Back is an occupational hazard for an actor whose career started at age 7. Will Wheaton is best known for his roles as Gordy in Stand By Me, Wesley Crusher in Star Trek The Next Generation, and as a version of himself on The Big Bang Theory. He wrote his first memoir in 2004. It was called Just a Geek, unflinchingly honest tales of the search for life, love, and fulfillment beyond the Starship Enterprise. And now, nearly 20 years later, he re-examines the attitudes of his younger, sometimes angrier self with annotated comments and new honesty about abuse by his parents, about regrets, depression, and surviving Hollywood. It's all in his new book, which is called Still Just a Geek. And Will Wheaton joins me now. Hello there from New Zealand.
Hi, it's lovely to speak with you.
Thanks for your time today. How hard was it to revisit the ideas and beliefs of your younger self?
It was extremely challenging for a number of reasons. As I started doing the annotations, I found myself feeling very impatient with the younger version of myself, sort of embarrassed and kind of annoyed by this kind of immaturity that I saw in myself. And as I spent more time with the person I used to be, and I worked through what has changed between then and now, I found this empathy and this compassion for the person I was. And I began to really understand that the person I was when I was turning 30 was in all kinds of pain, had not yet reckoned with being a survivor of child abuse and exploitation. I was trying desperately to just figure out where I fit in the world without really understanding that I had never been given an opportunity to choose the path I would walk to find that place. Huh. Like, I had been placed on this path as a child without my consent and without my consultation. And then I tried to make the best of it. And I reached a point where I kind of looked up and thought, this is not where I want to be. And a lot of that came out in Just a Geek. But I don't think that I had enough life experience and maturity to express it all clearly. I also held a lot back because I wasn't aware of what I was going on dealing with as a trauma survivor. And still just gave me an opportunity to look back at all of that and learn to really love and embrace the person I always was and the person I am now.
Given today's cultural climate, was there any reluctance to remind people of stuff that you said 20 years ago? A lot of people, particularly people in the public eye, worry about stuff that they said during a time when they didn't know as much about the world or when the conditions were different, resurfacing and getting them, you know, to use the word of the day, cancelled.
In America, when you hear someone say cancel culture, what they're generally talking about is they don't like having to deal with the consequences of choices they've made and have made no effort to atone for. Mm-hmm. I was never concerned about, being turned on or being rejected by people who might be interested in my story, because in my story, in my life, I think in all of our lives, we have these regretful moments that hopefully become opportunities for reflection and growth. And the only way to embrace those opportunities is to really accept that we've changed and to look at how we have changed and really own it. And that's what I attempted to do with this. I have these stories in here about just not understanding as a young, privileged, late 20-year-old white guy in America. I didn't understand how privileged I was. I didn't understand what it was like to be a woman in the world. I didn't understand what it was like to be somebody who wasn't exactly like me. And that just came out in stuff that I thought was funny. That's actually extremely hurtful. Now that I understand all of that, I felt that I had this opportunity and a responsibility to look back at it acknowledge how it's not okay and that it was never okay, and then say, listen, to anyone who cares to pay attention, this is a mistake that I made and I'm super sorry for it. And here is how I have learned from that mistake and used those lessons to inform a better version of myself. If we don't give people the opportunity to do that, what's the point of anything?
Agreed. And you, as we've sort of touched on, you held back in the first book about how much abuse you endured from your parents, how they forced you into acting as a child, withheld love and affection. And for other people who have stories like that, can you tell us, is it both painful and cathartic to be honest about it now, to share it?
It's extremely painful. I mean, just acknowledging the reality that there's two people in this world who are my mom and dad. I mean, I have chosen family that have absolutely done their best to step in and show up when I need them, and I love and cherish them for it. But there are two people on this planet, and they're the only people who can fill the holes that they deliberately made in me and allowed to exist. And they're just never, they just weren't interested in doing that, and they weren't capable of doing that, and it hurts like crazy all the time. Being able to speak honestly and openly about this, I don't know if I need to do this so publicly because I was forced to participate in my mother's lie so publicly. I think that's a big part of it, is feeling like, you know, I maintained the fiction, I believed the lie, I was so gaslighted by her, I believed the lie she told me that being an actor was my idea. I knew it wasn't true, and I don't know how to explain it. It makes no sense. I knew it wasn't true. I knew it wasn't my idea, but she told me it was my idea for so long that I just never really stopped to question it. Because when I attempted to do that and just get some honesty and some understanding, what I got was gaslighting and what my mom's version of the truth, kind of what she wanted things to be, were sort of delivered to me as the actual factual truth. And that was crazy, because it just contradicted my lived experience so much. And I just didn't know what to do with all of those feelings. And I often tell my wife that I really regret that I didn't figure this stuff out earlier. That I didn't work it out when I was younger, so that I could feel through my 30s and into my 40s the way I feel in the late, you know, on the backside of my 40s as I go into my 50s. But like, better late than never.
I'm 46, I hear you, man. I'm talking to Will Wheaton. His book is called Still Just a Geek. He was Gordy in Stand By Me, Wesley Crusher in Star Trek The Next Generation, and played a version of himself on The Big Bang Theory. You were just 14 when you starred in Stand By Me, a classic coming-of-age movie. River Phoenix, Corey Feldman, Jerry O'Connell. What goes through your mind when you watch that now?
I just see how sad I am. I see a little boy who is just in so much unbelievable pain and sadness.
Wow.
I see a child who is just so scared, and I remember being him. And I remember thinking, like, kind of becoming aware. I wasn't fully aware of how much enmity my father had for me until I was in my teens, when his abuse became physical rather than just emotional. When I was a kid, it was subtle things that I couldn't pick up, that I wasn't aware of: the teasing, the humiliating, the undermining, those sorts of scapegoating, things like that. And I think a lot of that is something that I, as a human, had in common with Gordy as a character, right? In the story, Gordy is this little boy who just wants so badly to be seen and loved in his home, and he's not. He has this thing that he loves to do, and his family doesn't care about it. So he finds family in his friends. And Chris ends up loving and caring for him and, like, looking after him to the best way that he possibly can. And I I identified with that so much, I didn't even know it. I sincerely believed I was acting this character because I was told this story, you know, about how perfect our life was and how great everything was and how not my experience was actually happening. And when I watch the movie now, I'm so proud of it. I'm so grateful for it. It's such an incredible honor to be part of something that has meant something to generations of people separated by culture and language and geography. And like, it's what an incredible privilege, what a gift. And I can hold all of that in my heart at the same time that I can just remember how sad that little boy was. And it is difficult. It has been lately. It has been difficult for me to see myself in that. Not always, but just lately, I think, because promoting this book and talking about it a lot has kind of stirred a lot of that up. Right now, I feel very emotionally close to that little boy. Huh. And it's a challenge to watch.
Yeah. You mentioned Chris, a character played by River Phoenix, and he died of a drug overdose in 1993. People will remember that. In the first book, you said he was cool. You expressed dismay that no one tried to stop him from being a junkie. But actually, you've revised that a little and still just to geek the new book. What did you want to say now that you didn't say then?
I think that a lot of issues related to addiction are related to trauma in some way. And I didn't know that when I wrote that. I was real judgy. I was real self-righteous. I was angry and hurt and sad. River was probably the finest actor of my generation. And was like, he was going to be one of those once in 100 year people. He had that ability to take what was on a page and bring it to life, no matter what the character was. And that is an unbelievable talent. I had a sense that River was in pain when we were close to each other, but I didn't understand why. And I didn't know what it was. And I felt like it was something that I wasn't equipped to talk about it. And when I was in my 20s and wrote Just a Geek, I just got mad about it. And I do believe that there are people that were around him who enabled and looked the other way and absolutely contributed to what happened to him. But I don't, you know, I think that I had misplaced anger, that I really regret, and I hope that I annotated it well and properly expressed now the compassion and the love that I have for him that was always there, that I just expressed in a different way that I would not choose to do if I were doing it today.
By the way, thanks for being so open about it in this interview, Will. We really appreciate it, and it means a lot to us. You did a few movies after Stand By Me, not great experiences. Then you got the role as Wesley Crusher on Star Trek The Next Generation. What did it mean, do you think, that Captain Picard ended up being played by Patrick Stewart, the captain of the Starship Enterprise, rather than, you know, James T. Kirk, a.k.a. William Shatner?
I want just a couple of brief little things about Star Trek.
Okay.
I was beside myself and overjoyed for two primary reasons. The biggest reason was that I was on a television series now, which meant that I had consistent employment, which meant that I didn't have to be in my public high school where I was the target of endless bullying.
Mm-hmm.
It meant that I did not have to be going on auditions all the time, which I absolutely hated because it just felt like it wasn't something I wanted to do. It meant that maybe this is going to make my mom happy. I write about this in the book. She had put all of her happiness and on my shoulders and in my hands. I'm like, finally, this will be enough for her, which maybe it'll be enough for Dad. Yeah. That was the biggest part about getting into Star Trek, right? All of those possibilities that it kind of opened up for me. And I was more relieved than anything else. Then there's this other part of me that has been a Star Trek fan since I can remember. Some of my earliest memories are listening to records, Star Trek records, from the 1970s on a little Fisher Price record player in my backyard. I adore Star Trek. I'm crazy about it. So here I am as a weird kid. And are you kidding me? I get to be part of Star Trek. I can't even believe this. The fact that we were brand new, that we were kind of coming up and saying, like, the original series was amazing, and here's where, you know, we're picking up the story and we're doing it differently. That was so exciting. And having this whole new, you know, this new cast and these new characters, and the Enterprise was so different from the original Enterprise, but there were things that were the same. There was just so much about it. And I'm really, really grateful that the actors who were cast in 1987 are exactly the ones who were cast then, because they became my family. I understand what you're saying, the difference between Patrick being lovely and wonderful and Shatner, who was really cruel to me at that time. But there's a much bigger picture, which is that the nine of us who made up the primary cast of Star Trek The Next Generation, we came together and we became a family in a way that is, like, kind of legendary in the entertainment industry. Everybody talks about it. As the host of The Ready Room, I talked to the actors and the creatives from the current incarnations of Star Trek, Discovery and Strange New Worlds, Picard, and every single one of them says, oh boy, we know all about how much you guys loved each other and how 30 years later, you're all close and you're family. And we really hope that we earn the same relationship with each other that you guys have with each other. That means so much to me, because I desperately needed a family, and they became that family for me without even knowing it. It wasn't even until last year that I finally had the courage to contact each member of the cast individually and tell them exactly what they specifically and personally meant to me, including Patrick.
You talk about the cast being family, but it seems to me that the fans too gave you that sort of, even after Star Trek, that unconditional support that you perhaps might want from a family. Was that the case?
When I was working on Next Generation, toxic fandom was extraordinarily cruel to me for tons of reasons. If someone really wants to know, they just look on the internet. It's everywhere. they really didn't like Wesley Crusher. They were very cruel to me, a 14-year-old child, a 14-year-old abused child, just without even thinking about how I was a person. And it was unbelievably hurtful. Because when all that happened, I would just, where my head went was, oh, everything your dad tells you about you is true. Look at the fans of the show hate you. And you're not even good enough for Star Trek. What I didn't know then was that the people who were being cruel and complaining were statistically insignificant. They were just, their voices were amplified. Their voices were, like, grossly amplified. And there were adults around in the industry, particularly in the convention industry, who kind of took advantage of that to sort of, like, hold me down and make me feel bad about myself. When Wesley came back on Star Trek Picard, the reaction from fandom knocked me off my feet. the overwhelming love, the celebration, the people telling me that they felt like they saw themselves in Star Trek again because that happened for Wesley, and how happy they were. They know my story. They know what Star Trek means to me. They know how Wesley's story and my story parallel one another in so many ways. That to receive that, and that, like, just that celebration that happened And it's ongoing. It's still happening. It's been like well over a week since that happened, and it's still happening. That these people are so, people I've never met are just like so excited and so kind and so celebratory and so loving. And I'm just so grateful that I am at a moment in my life, that I'm going to play my life, where I feel like I can accept that. And I can hold on to it, and I can let myself feel that love and that support, and it feels really great.
Yeah, I'm so pleased. And I just want to finish with this quote from you. In 2013, a woman in the audience of a Star Trek Comic Expo in Calgary asked you to do a video for her newborn daughter about why it's awesome to be a nerd, and you said, "It's not about what you love; it's about how you love it." And finding other people who love it the way you do. And I wonder if that's the best advice to anyone listening and anyone who read your book who feels like you felt for so long, like an outsider and not in control of your own life.
One of the things that I really love about modern convention culture and the particular part of nerd culture that I participate in, which is heavily focused on science fiction and Star Trek and gaming and the Marvel universe. There's a lot of people who found it for the same reason I did. There's so many of us who found love in these stories and these worlds because we didn't feel loved or at home or accepted or safe in the real world that we had to live in. And I am so grateful to be part of a culture that, by and large, with the exception of small pockets of toxic fandom, but by and large says, please just come as you are and let's love this together and let's have so much fun celebrating this thing that brings joy into our individual lives for reasons that are unique and special to us individually. I was in that culture as a consumer of it for my entire life. And I'm still in that culture as a consumer of it. It brings me incalculable joy. I also get to participate in that universe as a creator and as a contributor. And that is a privilege. That is an unbelievable privilege. And I think about what I said to that unborn little baby girl, who I think she would be like maybe 10 years old now. Huh. I think about that. And I think about how I told her, we have this great culture and you're going to get to be part of it. And I'm not going to let the culture make a liar out of me. We're all going to work on this together and we're all going to protect this. And we're going to continue to have this environment that's open and inclusive and forward-looking and progressive and safe and unbelievably diverse, because that is the future of humanity. You know, for people who want to fight against that, I'm sorry, you're going to be left behind. And I realize it scares you, but for the future of us, you know, I just keep thinking about how we have this one planet that we can live on that we know of and how it's telling us we're killing it. And for whatever reason, as a species, we have yet to join hands and go, well, let's stop this. Like, let's, you know, come on. If we, what else is there to do? And part of this entertainment culture that I'm in looks to a future that says, no, we actually did put our hands together and we really did do it. So maybe we're inspiring people. And maybe we are showing by our example of just showing up in places that there's so many of us that these things that we are facing are not things that we have to face alone.
I love it. And the book is called Still Just a Geek. I've been talking to Will Wheaton. And Will, thanks so much again for being so open with us today. And I really enjoyed talking to you. Cheers.
Really enjoyed speaking with you. Have a wonderful day.